Good morning. As I sat down to begin work on this presentation, I immediately had trouble. Writer's block, I presume. I looked back over my two prior presentations. One was in the summer of 2006, entitled Finding Balance in an Unbalanced World, and one was done on gratitude the Sunday following Thanksgiving in 2010. I realized that I had already said so much of what I thought I still had left to say. Not only that, but I realized that I'm still working on balance daily, as well as gratitude. And I undoubtedly always will be. In fact, both balance and gratitude are pretty basic to any spiritual quest. After I reviewed those, I skimmed over a few of the books I wanted to talk about that had been large parts of my spiritual progression, and I realized that there's a good chance you've already read them. In this confusion, I was aware of the feeling of all my thoughts about my topic, that they had congealed into a big mental block. Can you blame me? You know who you are. You are intelligent, thoughtful, well-read people who can also be opinionated and argumentative like me. Some of you believe in a higher power or energy force that you might refer to as God. Some of you don't. Some of you are pretty much a lot more disciplined in your spiritual practices and have a lot to share yourselves. Many, many of us look at anyone who talks as if something is fact to be rather dogmatic. And that's why we're UUs, or at least part of it. So forgive me if anything that I talk about today sounds like I believe it to be fact. I don't know. I only know what it seems like to me when I'm not arguing with myself, which happens a lot. I don't remember a time when I didn't wonder about why we are here. Why are we on earth? Do we have a purpose? When I broached the topic as a child, I was given a response appropriate to my family's religion, which was congregational. That didn't do much for me, though. I'd always assumed that no matter where in the world I had been born or what family or religion I had been born into, I most likely would have been expected to believe what they believed. I felt alone, and I'm pretty sure they felt I was a heretical child. In fact, I took the position at an early age that belief was something you couldn't control. It was something that had to come from within, to grow from within. Commitment, that was different. That was a decision you could make. But belief, I didn't think that was something one could decide. To this day, I still don't understand why some people judge others for being non-believers. I guess they think perhaps we should all just go along to get along, something that is most often not appropriate. More likely, I suspect many of the judgers live in a state of fear. Maybe they've decided to believe in what they have been told to believe in fear of hell or some other catastrophe. I don't know. As a child growing up in Avon Lake, Ohio, which is about 18 miles west of Cleveland, it's a little suburb, when I couldn't sleep, I would look out my eastern-facing window, which pretty much picked up the glow of lights over Cleveland. And I remember worrying that that light I saw was from a bomb sent by the former Soviet Union to take us all out. Nightly, I would feel this nightly. I was slightly too young to have gone through the training that some of us had in school teaching us, was it duck and roll? I don't remember that. I was just slightly too young for that. But I did have fear of death from a bomb nonetheless, a nuclear bomb at that. Fear of death often triggers other thoughts, which for me have been, again, why are we here? Does life have a purpose? If it does, what is it? I have never answered these questions, nor have I ceased my search. I know the answers are unknowable, but these questions are my passion. I go through lulls, but eventually, historically, I always return to them. As a child and a teenager, I had lots of deja vu experiences. I don't have as many now. But as a child, they made me question the concept of time. It was really disconcerting to walk into my first day of French class in 10th grade that was on the second floor of a building that I'd never been in before. I'd been on the lower floors, but I had never before been on the second floor. And yet, I had been there before. I felt it. I knew I hadn't, but I also knew I had. I have also had a few of what I guess you would call psychic experiences, which I have to tell you I do believe in. I also believe in disembodied spirits, but when someone claims to have seen them or claims to be a psychic, I'm still a skeptic. In any event, these experiences have caused me to question the energy all around us, the measurable and immeasurable, but also the unmeasurable, as yet, energy forces. And I wonder. I felt fortunate to be brought up in a family where college was a pretty much a foregone conclusion. The only question was, where will you go and what will you major in? Going to college was by far the best thing I ended up doing for myself. It definitely hasn't put me in a situation where I've made lots of money, but then my degree is an undergrad in psychology. It's just a bachelor's, not a postgraduate degree, and it's not really too vocationally relevant. It did, however, college did force me to take my first philosophy class, which I found I loved. I now wish it had also forced me to take a class in anthropology, which I have since done, but I did not know enough about myself at that time. My classes, as well as all the other aspects of going to college away from home, helped my spiritual progression in that I learned so much about myself and my beliefs, but also about other people. It was during my senior year at Hope College in Holland, Michigan, when I had my first real, I guess you'd call, religious experience. I was living off campus with some friends, and strangely, I had the house to myself. It was 1977, and I wanted to meditate. The music I chose was Styx, definitely of that era. I had the headphones on, and I decided nobody's home. I laid down smack in the middle of the living room carpet, and I started relaxing, starting with my toes and my feet. As I felt myself relax through my entire body and recognized the oncoming sensation of lightness, I mulled over some of the seemingly contradictory messages I'd been picking up in my philosophy text and lectures that conflicted with one of my upper-level psychology classes. This led me to thinking about how complex it all is. I remember wondering if maybe, since we all expect the answers to our spiritual questions to be so complex, we look for answers in that direction, the direction of complexity. Then I remembered a few people I had known that I was trying to teach perhaps a new job, and it was really quite a simple job, but they couldn't pick it up. And the reason, they thought it was harder than it was. They had this mental block because it didn't fit into their expectations of complexity. At about the same time as I'm pondering all this and was feeling lighter and lighter, the sense of weightlessness and floating became apparent. I became aware of a feeling of being at one with everything, everything, all. It was fabulous. I had a sense of the molecules in my body and my clothes vibrating and overlapping with the vibrating molecules of energy in the house around me, the ground below, and then spreading to the rest of the world, the universe, all that is. It didn't last long, although honestly I lost the sense of time in what I presume was under 10 seconds. Then it was over. The trouble with having an experience like that is that you want more of them. So we continued trying to have them again, defeating the whole purpose. In an effort to develop my spirituality so that those experiences could and would happen again more frequently and without provocation, my spiritual quest continued and continues to this day. As a child, my reading was largely about reincarnation. That interest was brought on by the previously mentioned deja vus I'd been having as a child and trying to understand the concept of time. To me, reincarnation in some form, I'm not sure how it might work, it's always made more sense to me than any other explanation. Take the concept of justice. We know that there are murderers out there who will not be caught, as we say, brought to justice. We know there are people out there who think nothing of hurting others to get what they want. With a belief in reincarnation, I can believe in karma, in cause and effect, and yes, in justice. Reincarnation resonates with me, and it does seem to answer some of my questions, but by no means all of them. While a belief in karma and reincarnation help me to take responsibility for my life, this belief can also cause concern when things don't work out the way I think they should. It can cause me to think, what in the world did I do in my past lives to deserve this? In one of my first meditations where I asked a specific question, I wanted to know why my grandmother had always seemed to dislike me for no apparent reason. As I was laying there relaxing and asked, you know, was relaxing and I asked that question, the picture that arose in my head, it showed me in some previous century as an old, short man with long gray hair in a position of power over a young man who was my grandmother in this life. I had the feeling he worked for me and that in some fashion I had abused my power. Don't know how. It didn't matter. And it didn't matter if the vision was real or not. That was moot. I suddenly understood how it was conceivable that she could dislike me without even really knowing that she did. I was able to forgive her, and I hope she was able to forgive me. A belief in reincarnation is just part of my spiritual journey. Once I got bored reading about past life regressions, I found myself drawn to, yes, New Age material. I read books that were allegedly channeled. One of those, a Bartholomew book, had a suggestion that gave me hope. He suggests that we each try to be 49% harmful and at least 51% harmless in our lives. I liked that. It seemed doable, certainly more doable than being perfect. This book also suggested an exercise to help our spiritual progression insofar as it would help us to get to know oneself better. In this exercise, you sit for 8 hours in a quiet place with no distractions. Pen, a lot of paper, water, and have a bathroom handy nearby. Then you attempt to write down every thought you have for 8 hours. Yes, naturally at first you can't catch more than a fraction of them and your hand gets quite tired. I only made it for 4 hours, but that time absolutely flew by. As the time passed, my thoughts slowed down a lot. And I was able to see layers of thoughts, thoughts on top of thoughts. Behind some of the top levels of conscious thought, I noticed an underlying level. It was really strange. It was like a reader board going by with the words on it. It was unusual. Let's see now. I haven't done this exercise again, but I highly recommend it. It really was eye-opening. It's difficult to find that large block of time, which was why I cut it down to 4 hours as opposed to 8, but it was time very well spent. Most recently, in addition to meditating, which I admit I don't do as regularly as I know would be beneficial, I've been enjoying getting a thoughtful quotation every day via the net. I don't necessarily agree with them all, or even most of them, but some of them have been right on point with what I was going through that day. The first one that touched me enough that I printed it off was by Walter Elliott, who said, "Perseverance is not a long race. It is many short races, one after the other." Of course, many others have said similar things going back to Confucius. This thought is repeated by modern-day life coaches. Take Tony Robbins, who said, "In essence, if we want to direct our lives, we must take control of our consistent actions. It's not what we do once in a while that shapes our lives, but what we do consistently." Tony has a few good ones, like, "It's not the events of our lives that shape us, but our belief as to what those events mean. And it's not what we get, but who we become, what we contribute that gives meaning to our lives." Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. said, "A mind that is stretched by a new experience can never go back to its old dimensions." C.S. Lewis, "Friendship is unnecessary, like philosophy, like art. It has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things that give value to survival." From Zig Ziglar, "People often say that motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily." Clarissa Pinkola Estes has one on forgiveness. "How does one know if she has forgiven? You tend to feel sorrow over the circumstances instead of rage. You tend to feel sorry for the person rather than angry with him. You tend to have nothing left to say about it all." Khalil Gibran, "Doubt is a pain too lonely to know that faith is his twin brother." I like this one from Henry Ward Beecher. "A person without a sense of humor is like a wagon without springs. It's jolted by every pebble on the road." Einstein said, "Any intelligent fool can make things bigger and more complex. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction." How about this one from Robert Frost? I don't even know that it pertains to today, but I liked it. Don't ever take a fence down until you know why it was put up. It may not sound very spiritual, but it does seem very sound. I've always liked a lot of what Wayne Dyer has to say, and I've actually memorized his 10 Secrets to a Happy Life. There are so many, many, many more. Basically, anything and everything can be a spiritual tool. My main spiritual tools in the last decade have been this fellowship, meditation, journaling, and works of various authors that include Gary Zukav and Eckhart Tolle. Both of these gentlemen talk about being in the moment and awareness. Today's readings that Will read came from one of Mr. Tolle's books. He is wonderful at clarifying for me the importance of leaving the analytical mind and its false created self, the ego, behind. Mr. Tolle says that as we grow up, we form a mental image of who we are based upon our personal and cultural conditioning. He refers to this phantom self as the ego. It's not that he thinks we should get rid of it. That is impossible. But he does advocate awareness of it and rising above thought. He's speaking of the endless chatter that is going on constantly in our head, the chatter that's telling us we're not good enough or whatever it may be saying. He refers to this phantom self as the ego. I'm having a rough morning. To the ego, the present moment hardly exists. Only past and future are considered important. It's always concerned with keeping the past alive because without it, who are you? The ego constantly projects itself into the future to ensure its continued survival and to seek some kind of release or fulfillment there. It says, one day when this or that happens, I'm going to be okay, happy, at peace. Mr. Tolle says that in an enlightened state, you still use your mind. And when you do, particularly when a creative solution is needed, you oscillate every few minutes or so between thought and stillness, between mind and no mind, which he defines as consciousness without thought. Tolle stresses that while the mind has a purpose, it can be a really negative influence on us if we aren't aware of our thoughts and let them influence us in non-productive and even destructive ways. His books, along with a few other awareness exercises, have been fabulous for me. They've helped me at least start letting go of thoughts that are harmful. Of course, to consciously let go of a thought, awareness of that thought is a requirement. I've learned to recognize the thought and feel it in my body. If it is harmful or does not feel right, I let go of it. By feeling the thought, I can be in the moment. Another way of being in the moment is to ask yourself what your next thought will be. That is much like the earlier writing down my thoughts exercise I told you about. It's not easy to be aware of your thoughts, especially if you never thought you had a dark side, because you'll find it. But recognizing the thoughts and feelings without judgment, like envy and fear, maybe even hatred, help one from acting unconsciously and help in letting go of the negative effects of these emotions. Being aware of negative thoughts and emotions does not strengthen them, the opposite. They live in the dark, and when awareness or light is shown on them, they lose their power. As to the question of why, the only answers that really make sense are why not and because. Thank you.